not tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have an industry executive. He's currently the president of Next Plateau Entertainment and has discovered some of the biggest names in industry today, man. We're talking about John Travolta, Salt and Peppa, R&B sensation Sybil, and new R&B group Nina Sky. Everybody, please welcome Mr. Eddie O'Loughlin to the Producer's Corner.
Hey, hi. How you doing, this, Bud? Thank you.
Oh,
thanks for having me on the air. I love that these shows exist, Bud, because, you know, when you're trying to figure out what you're doing in the music industry, or when you're even in the music industry and trying to figure out what we're doing, what everybody's doing, it's so nice to have reference points. So this is a great service that you provide, and it's very nice, and I appreciate you having me on the air.
Oh, thank you so much, man. Thank you. Well, Eddie, man, for those of you that don't know about you too much, man, can you give us a little background of how and when you started in the music industry?
Well, currently I own a record company called Next Plateau. It's one of the, I guess, luckiest, more successful indie companies in America. I didn't start that way, though. I started as a songwriter and found out a few years later, after being a songwriter, that I was better at helping songwriters instead of being the songwriter, and that was called being a music publisher. So I developed into being a music publisher, and from there, as I was pitching and running songs for people, they were called song pluggers those days, we're talking about the early 70s.
Yeah.
I found that I should really learn how to develop the song in the studio, and that is called producing. So I would work to try and arrange the song to make it sound better, and I would produce demo after demo, and eventually I became, well, nobody really becomes anything in the music business. You just kind of just process, out of a process. Nothing's ever official, but out of a process of making so many demos, I developed into somewhat of an accomplished record producer, where the records sounded so good that they were no longer demos. They actually were master quality and quite commercial, and I became somewhat of a successful record producer, producing dance music was kind of new at that time. It was called disco.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I found a young girl named Carol Douglas, and we made a record called Doctor's Orders and Midnight Love Affair and Burnin', and we had a great run of top 10 Billboard, not just dance hits, but pop hits throughout the world and R&B hits as well. And at the same time, I was still developing, I was still acting as a music publisher, and I was publishing Gloria Gaynor. I was a music publisher.
Oh, wow.
Back in the early 70s. So, one step kind of cascaded or transcended into another. So starting off as a songwriter, then into a song plugger, then into a producer, and then finally I said, you know, if I'm going to really be producing these records, I really want to make sure they get promoted properly. So I had a lot of energy, and what I did is I started a little record company with a man named Bob Reno, who was my mentor. And it was called Midland Records, and the first record on the label was Carol Douglas, Doctor's Orders, which was top 10 worldwide. The next act we signed was John Travolta, and then we signed another act called Silver Convention, and we had some number one hits with Fly Robin Fly, Get Up and Boogie.
Yeah.
We developed that for a number of years, and after that I decided I would like to start my own record company. I was employed at that business. I decided to start my own company called Plateau.
Nice.
And we started as a independent company, but really producing a lot of records for Atlantic Records. We had a girl named Jenny Burton. We had a few top 10 hits called Bad Habits and I Remember What You Like, and we did that for a number of years. And then I said, let's just do Next Plateau as a fully independent record company. Let's take the chance. And in about the mid-80s, we started looking for talent and distributing the records independently, promoting them on the radio, and it was quite a task. It was much more than I imagined, because previously I'd been producing records, and kind of, even though I had a label, it was really like a custom label, and it was distributed by a major label where they did the marketing, promotion, they took the financial risk.
Sure.
It's a very different scenario when one is doing it on their own, everything, and it was like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. details we were missing and how much was being done by the major labels. So we had to kind of figure that out. And we did. And we signed some wonderful acts like Ultramagnetic MCs, groundbreaking rap act, and Sybil, we had great hits with like Walk On By,
Oh Yeah,
Me Over, and Salt and Pepper, which we had a 9-year run of, I don't know how many hits, it was
tons. Hits. Yeah.
Finished with Waterman and Shoop, and started with I'll Take Your Man and Push It, and just a great run of records with a tremendous producer named Herbie Azor, and a wonderful talented girl, Salt and Pepper. So each step just evolved, and every day everybody in the music business is like myself, really just trying to figure it out again and trying to come up with the puzzle, and the answer to the puzzle is always, is the song, is the record, is the artist great?
Right, exactly.
That's really what the bottom line is. There's no magic to this stuff.
You know, now going, focusing back on your, looking back on your production side of your talents, when a song is presented to you, the songs and rosters that you put together for your artists, were these songs that you've composed yourself, or did you have a team of writers and producers that come in, or were these songs handed to you already finished and you kind of put the pieces together to form a picture for everybody?
You know, sometimes people come in with finished music. Often it's a case of putting things together. I mean, at this minute I'm presenting the song to an artist and combining it with a different producer and a remixer. So every artist, every project is really different. So Salt and Pepper were very wonderful, fully talented group. They had a producer who wrote and produced all their hits. I only had to give them one song, It's Your Thing, which was the follow-up to Push It. Because Push It was a very hard record to follow up on, if you recall.
Yeah, that's a huge hit, man.
It's a huge hit, but it's unusual. It's a hard record. It's a sound record. Dun, 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 dun.
Sure.
It's a tough record to follow up with. So we came up with like a go-go sound out of Washington. And we did the It's Your Thing, What You Wanna Do.
Oh, yeah.
And gave it a different kind of go-go beat, and it was a good segue. But that group wrote and produced all their own music, and it was just one magical moment after another. Other artists appreciate the ideas. So with Sybil, I would give her song ideas, and sometimes bring it to producers who had song ideas. And she did very well, had a wonderful run of hits. So it's all different, but each act has its own demands.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know, focusing, talking about the 80s, man, as you know, studios and platforms have transitioned into the DAW world of recording. Let's go back on the first platform, let's say probably mid-80s, going to the 90s. What was the platform you guys were using for recording back then?
As far as equipment, you mean?
Yeah, equipment. Was it SSL, re-recording to the 2-inch tape, and kind of like your old platform of putting those songs, recording it together?
Well, somewhere in the early 80s, I lost track of the band.
Okay.
The live musician was just disappearing.
Oh, yeah.
And I hated that because I used to love the camaraderie and asking, you know, the drummer if he could play 16ths on the cymbal. Oh,
sure.
Maybe try eighths, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just a nice camaraderie. You have laughs, you had fun. The bass was a little slow, you're dragging, you know? But somewhere in the early 80s, we lost track of that, and synthesizers, but the synthesizers, yeah, they started coming into play.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. And the computers, guys would come in with a Mac and they're like, yeah, rock my record. It's like, what are you talking about?
That's right.
What, television set looked like at that point. but we would work in the big studios up until, I'd say, truthfully, in the early 80s, 83, 84, it became too compelling that guys were making great records in very small studios. I mean, records like Planet Rock were being made in, like, basements.
Oh, yeah.
Garages.
Mm-hmm.
So the feel was still there. So we kind of got, I myself got away from the desire or the demand to work in the large media sound, Hit Factory, Sony, whatever the big companies, the big studios were.
Sure.
And I can tell you a true story about what happened sometime in the early 90s is that Herbie Azor was the manager, producer, mentor of Salt and Pepper, and we jointly decided that the group was so big at that time, and we had been selling maybe 1.5 million albums each time out. And we thought, gee, maybe if we hooked up and aligned ourselves up with a major company, that maybe they can carry the group even further. So after 4 albums of just being totally independent, we decided to go into business with a company called London Polygram.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm familiar with Polygram, definitely.
They became now Universal. But they were Polygram at that point. And Herbie wanted to impress, as a good producer would, the new executives over at Polygram. And he made a record, made 4 or 5 cuts in a state-of-the-art studio with SSL and memory and anything you could imagine. I mean, every piece of modern equipment that was available in 1993, 94, I'm going to say. And he brought 5 cuts to me. And I listened to them and I said, Herbie, these records sound so technically excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, these are really technically, I never heard the group sound like this before. They sound technically brilliant.
Yeah.
But they don't sound like Salt-N-Pepa anymore.
Right.
They don't sound real. This doesn't feel authentic. These records don't feel authentic. And he laughed and he said, I'm going back to my garage, aren't I? I said, I think you gotta go back to your garage, Herbie. I think that's where the feel was.
Oh, yeah.
And those very same records that were done in state-of-the-art, beautiful studios where every rock star was working at, he went back to his garage and he made those records, the same exact records, so much better. And I had copies of those on CD at one time of the difference, and there really is a day and night difference. One just sounds like an advertisement, like that technically good.
Right.
One sounds like shoop, shoo-be-doo,
sure.
Shoop. It just feels, and those cuts were shoop, what a man, nobody's, none of your business. Those were the same exact cuts. So I really got a sense that feel is so much more important. It was a confirmation. It wasn't a sense. It was a confirmation that we have to stay steady to feel and not get all carried away by the technology.
I agree. You know, being a producer myself and a composer, I'm definitely an advocate of designing a studio for the way you work as a producer. And you know, I hear a lot of young producers coming up in the game, everybody's on the bandwagon of another producer, and in the names driven on these companies and the media hype of Pro Tools, Cubase. I mean, if you see Dr. Dre or Swizz Beatz using it, you want to use it yourself, but not knowing the functionality may not be appropriate for your workflow.
Right.
You know, so again, I'm a real strong believer in that, and I'm glad you guys definitely stuck to your guns on that.
Well, that's astute of you, and that takes it takes time to go through that process. If you're very young, you're new to this whole experience, you tend to want to follow along and do what Dr. Dre does. But then he may have a whole different application, as you know, in applying that same equipment that you maybe don't know about.
Exactly.
So you have to go with what's comfortable for you, and just the most important thing for me is the put that feel through. What is it? Does it feel right? Maybe if it sounds a little bit not as perfect technically.
Yeah.
That's okay if the record feels good. It depends what kind of piece of music you're doing. You know, it's that's another piece to it as well.
No, I totally agree. You know, transitioning, let's focus on the music side and the business side of being a record executive. You've been in the game a long time, Eddie, and you can definitely see a change from 80s and 90s and now how the music industry has changed as far as the internet driven for marketing promotions and downloads and sales. What have you done differently to stay in the game and be successful as you are of transitioning with the time changes and, you know, technology?
Well, what we have to do now is really make sure the marketing component is present in introducing an act. And when we don't have a marketing component, it's much more difficult. And when I say a marketing component, I mean a marketing partner. We have a group that we signed probably December, January, called MadCon. Pretty big record right now called Beggin'.
Okay.
Beggin' You. But that was introduced through an Adidas advertisement. that the group had worked on, the group's management had worked on for maybe 8 months, a year. It took a long time.
Yeah.
But that helped introduce that group to this country. So those components are really important. After that, we put a lot of time into trying to get people to really pay attention to our groups through these marketing partners. So Desperate Housewives took the act. HBO used MadCon for their summer premium advertising.
Yeah.
So a lot of time is spent in pitching music to the movie producers, movie directors, soundtrack people, advertising, and it's an area that we really didn't focus on 20, 30 years ago. At that time, it was music, 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 A&R, 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 arrangement,
Yeah. Field,
sound, song, lyric, all the focus was there. You bring it out to clubs, bring it out to radio, and hope that things could go very well. But today, much more focus on who are your marketing partners? Where is the platform? What is the platform? Is there a platform?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's very, very difficult right now where the internet is so helpful to everybody. It's also billions of songs available today.
Yes.
Billions. So it's so hard to make an impression. So a lot of energy and time is put into trying to create a marketing partner. You can't always do it either. But almost every hit you hear or see has something attached to it. Either it came from a camp of somebody, whether it be Lil Wayne, who is endorsing a project, or whether it be, was it Chris Brown did the chewing gum advertisement?
Sure, oh yeah, the Doublemint. Mm-hmm.
So this is like, this wouldn't have happened years ago. I mean, artists would never want to be associated with a product. They may let them put their banner up and at a concert.
Right.
Heineken beer maybe, but they didn't endorse products those days. Nobody ever did that. But today, if you don't, it could be difficult to break through, and it's actually kind of sad, but it's the reality of what's going on today, and that's how we have to confront it. So that's what we've done with our acts. Nina Sky, the same thing. They were able to break immediately with an undeniable smash hit called Move Your Body.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was just one of those records you get 2, 3, 4 a year that are undeniable,
mm-hmm. That
just cut like knives.
Tears down the club as soon as it comes on.
That record just had that beat. It was called the Coolie Beat out of Jamaica.
Yeah.
Their voices worked, but trust me, the minute that record broke, we were trying to lock up marketing partners for them.
Oh, wow.
That's immediately to see if we can gain traction to keep things going. So that's a big difference that didn't really... wasn't a factor years ago. That was more like, oh, yeah, really? That happened? Oh, it's going to be in a movie? No, that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, I agree. You know, since the market has changed and kind of your direction for the business has changed a little, especially with the marketing-driven promotional push, is there a specific talent that you look for that can catch Eddie's eye and say, you know what, this is going to be marketable? You know, is it marketing dollars, or are you marketing for just because it's great talent? What do you look for as a complete package in an artist or producer?
Even though marketing is so important today, promotion, marketing is so meaningful, still the artist has to be unique. It has to be something about that performer, for me, that communicates, that has resonates, some kind of a sound. It could not be, it doesn't have to be a big voice, but something a little distinctive that just sounds like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. That's a nice sound. And of course, has to have a memorable song. The chorus just has to resonate in something memorable, something that just is going to stay with you over and over again. So in that way, things have not changed. We're still making records. I'm still making records the same way I did 35 years ago.
Nice.
But as soon as we're making them, while we're making the record, almost immediately we're thinking, how could we introduce this? What's going to be the hook? I mean, is there a piece to this that could help us introduce this project? And that's kind of what we're searching for all the time.
Nice.
And it's an area, by the way, the dance music area, which is a small end of the business today. It's not a large end.
Right.
Where Cascada comes from, where September comes from, where actually Pitbull doesn't come. Everybody comes from the club environment.
Sure.
But that zone of music has DJs and radio personalities that are really into the music only. They're not so interested in the marketing partners or what the story is nationally, and it's a pleasant area to work in. So we do a number of, we may produce or release at least 2 dance records a month that we, because it's a nice area to work in, because you get feedback right away, like, I don't like that record, Eddie, keep it away from me, or, yeah, we're going to start spinning it this week. So you get a nice test, and it's one of the few areas, but most of the other areas, it's like, who are you affiliated with, who else is on your track.
Sure.
And,
kind of everyone's piggybacking off of each other's names these days.
That's kind of, one way it operates today, and that's fine, but that's just what it is.
Yeah, oh, totally. You know, for the independent artists, and as you mentioned, a lot of everybody's going independent these days because of technology, and it's allowing us to be heard than it was 15 years ago. What would you recommend for the independent artist really trying to establish himself as a label, an artist, or producer?
Gotta attack your hometown. Gotta own your hometown. And that's difficult if your hometown is Manhattan.
Yeah.
If you live in New York, it's kind of tough.
Right.
But you really, you got to find, and even there, you got to create a name in your hometown. Like DJ Clue, I mean, the guy broke out of New York by mixtapes, getting on mixtapes.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that's never changes is you have to start small. I mean, Chris Blackwell. People don't even know who he is probably, but anyway, Chris Blackwell was the founder of Island Records, right, which is now Island Def Jam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris Blackwell started in Jamaica 50 years ago, 1959, and what he did is he went to a piano player at the Half Moon Hotel, and he said, could I record you? I mean, Chris Blackwell, nobody knew him, nobody cared about him.
Sure.
So he made an album, he pressed 500 up reportedly, and sold 50 only. But he learned about the business, and he learned about it right in his own Jamaica area. Within 3 years, he signed a girl named Millie Small, who had a top 5 hit called My Boy Lollipop all over the world, and he learned more about the business, and then he moved to London and became Chris Blackwell by signing Bob Marley. Well, he had Bob Marley in Jamaica, and U2, and built one of the giant record companies of all time. But he didn't start with U2, he didn't start with Bob Marley, he started with a piano player at the Half Moon. So the point, I think, is to start at maybe your local college station. Start at a local studio. A friend has a studio. Maybe a friend has a studio. You may have some equipment.
Right.
Hang records out. See if you can get them played somewhere. If you're an artist, see if you can sing on people's rap tracks. Or just get into the community any way you can.
You know, I try to stress, too. I mean, that's a good point, valid taken on that. You know, I try to stress to everybody that I encounter is, you know, being studio groomed. You know, sometimes you'll have a great artist that's really raw, no studio experience whatsoever. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to get with somebody local in your town, get some demo tapes done, just get used to being in that environment, in a studio environment, you know, so that, I mean, because that's going to prepare you for stage and, you know, just give you that artist development. Yeah, so I'm a big advocate on that.
Yeah, and start small. Don't think about Usher. Don't think about Jay-Z. Start small. Just start local. Because that's how they started.
Yeah.
Nobody, very few, well, you know, American Idol, people look at American Idol, that's unique. That's a unique situation.
Yeah.
But, and even they, before they got to American Idol, they were probably singing local places as well.
Oh, yeah, every last one of them.
Exactly. Sure.
Man, so what's on the plate for Eddie, man? What do you got on your plate? I know you're sound so biz, you got things in the works with your groups and things. What else have we got looking forward to?
We're always signing new talent. We're excited about a young lady named Sarah McLeod, a rock performer from Australia that we've recorded in a more dance pop crossover style. And we put one record out called White Horse that did pretty good. And pretty good means she sold like 20,000.
Nice.
The new single just shipped last week, and already SiriusXM have just added it today, in fact. And a station in Seattle that breaks a lot of new talent, C89, they added it last Tuesday. So we're enthusiastic about her. She's that's a little different kind of performance. She has a very authentic rock voice. She is authentic. She's a rock singer, but in blending in with the synths and the dance kind of flavor. Arrangements, it comes up with like a hybrid of a new kind of sound. So we're really looking forward to developing her and hopefully it follows through with some of the other acts and we build on our strength that we just had with MadCon. We're also working with a great new act out of Detroit called JTX, who, again, is starting in Detroit, where he's from. We've been working with him for a while now. And his record is just about getting some local attention right now. He's on 3 stations in Detroit, and I'm talking about maybe less than 10 spins each week on those 3 stations, maybe 7, 8, 9 spins each. But it's enough to create a little spark, and from that, he's getting shows and playing. So hopefully, in 2010, 2011, JTX could be an artist to reckon with. So it's the same process all the time. We're always signing and developing and trying and experimenting.
Man, that sounds like a plan, Eddie. And I do appreciate you coming by and, you know, chopping it up with me and sharing your wealth of knowledge, not only with me, but everybody who's listening. I mean, because everyone who listens to the show, they should be on the grind of getting to your level of success and continuing to better themselves as a record executive or a musician or producer. And for me, as like, even with the experience that I have all these years, I still have an empty cup everywhere I go that's new to me, and I'm always looking for more information, and I do appreciate you coming by and sharing that with me.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, actually, Spud. I look forward to meeting you, too, again, and great. Thank you for having me on.
Everybody, put your hands together for Eddie O'Loughlin.
Very nice. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And shout out again to Mr. Eddie O'Loughlin coming on the show and chopping it up with me. You know, the main reason I wanted to talk to Eddie is to show a different side to music. I wanted to show the business side. And since there's so many different independent labels that are coming up, doing their own thing, having an independence to really push out their own projects, you know, not feeling the stress of, you know, different industry executives wanting to change your vision of your own record, your own project. I mean, because you're the creative force behind the record. I mean, I just feel it's every artist's right to have their own say-so and their own control of their music. You know, I was just talking to a buddy of mine, man, and a local artist here in the area. And, you know, sometimes he... You know, you see the lifestyle that is perceived by a lot of artists, having the money, having the glamour, fortune, the cars and the houses, the bling, you know, but we're also forgetting artistry sometimes, you know, that sacrifice of, you know, really becoming a good artist, man, you know, can be overshadowed by the success and money the industry can give you. And, you know, I just told him, I said, man, seriously, I wouldn't want to sacrifice my beliefs and morals of production and music to make a quick dollar. You know, I really want to be recognized as a producer that puts out great music and compositions and hopefully can inspire other young guys coming up in the game to follow my ways and trends of production also, as I looked up to my mentors of music, you know, just passing that down. And, you know, I just feel it's really important to have that independence as a musician to do what you want and have the fans make the choice of the music they select and buy. And, you know, Eddie, man, he's, you know, again, the Salt and Pepper act was huge, one of the biggest acts in hip-hop, and they're still remembered to this day, man. They definitely made a mark in an industry. And, you know, having that creative force of Eddie O'Loughlin behind that project, again, was really a huge honor for him to be on the show. And thank you again, Mr. Eddie O'Loughlin. And for those of you that would like to see a little bit more information on Eddie, some of the other groups that he's produced that's currently on his label, man, hit up his website at www.nextplateauent.com. And he's got his current artist there, man. It's a lot of information there. It's a really nice website. So definitely check that out. And if you'd like to check out some of my other past interviews I had and my current interviews, definitely hit my website up as well. And that's www.spud2tight.ning.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to the show today. Please stay tuned for next week, man. I got another hot show for everybody. And I want to thank you again for listening. You guys be good. Keep them ideas fresh. Peace.